Well, welcome to you both. Obviously, this is the Dean's office, so quite the perfect setting for us to be having this conversation. So as I set the scene a bit, it's 2022. We've had the global pandemic and multiple variants at this point. And the faculty needs not only a new dean, but also someone to act as dean for a year. Now, Catherine, as associate dean in the faculty previous to this position, you may have had an idea, and tell me if I'm wrong, you may have had an idea of what the faculty might face during your appointment, bracing for any surprises thrown at you, of course. What ultimately made you decide to come forward to act as dean for the year, given the context you were coming into?
So it's an interesting question. I think for folk like me who come from a belief about how leaders work with and collaborate with and build teams with, it felt like a natural step to move from my position as part of a team as an associate dean to taking the lead role with the team as an acting dean for a period of time. And partly because I was motivated in creating a strong transition that would leave the faculty in a good place from which to embrace and work with a new incoming dean. So I think my motivation was mostly faculty oriented, but I also believe in the power of our faculty to do good things in the work we're doing and in the ways we're moving forward. So it felt a useful thing I could do to assist the faculty in moving in that direction.
And I would like to say that I am extremely grateful for what Catherine did in terms of the transition. It hasn't been the easiest of times for you, Vic. I had not also anticipated all the changes that have gone through. And I think that if I had found them in my first year, it would have not contributed to setting me up for success as a dean. So I'm really, really grateful for the buffering zone and also for the opportunity that the faculty had to have somebody with your experience, Catherine, both as a scholar in leadership, but also with some other life in government. Catherine is a former minister for education, so it's not that experience is not held generally in universities in a visible way, but it's extremely important as we negotiate with the government, as we learn to also address the needs of society that are very different today. And in government conversations, I think we have that role. It's an ambivalent role, actually, in terms of protecting what we can do and the services we can provide, but also in terms of making the services relevant to the times we're in, right? So that those conversations are extremely important, and I'm sure that Catherine will continue to be involved in supporting our faculty to go in that direction.
Oh, this is beautiful. Oh my gosh. Okay. So you've been acting dean since July 1st, 2022. What would you say were some of the biggest challenges or the biggest highlights?
So challenges is the one that comes easily to mind, and it is the fact that we had basically two rounds of budget cuts in the faculty and across campus, and I don't think anyone knew it was on the horizon. There was no indication in the immediate post-COVID period to illustrate we were going to have issues with enrollments, and yet we did. And so as a result of that, there were budget cuts in my first September, so the first time that's so busy on campus, and we were faced with, not only knowing that we had to cut almost $1 million from our faculty budget, but also that I was trying to figure out even how the budget worked at the same time as I'm making decisions about how to reduce it. So that was probably the biggest challenge. And it continued throughout the entire year, and it really flavored the work we did as a faculty, I would say. But there were some highlights as well, and so I think from the highlight perspective, I would mention the work we've done continuing on a trajectory of engaging students as leaders in our faculty. So the work we did this year with EDSI, getting it launched and doing some work in community and in the school, in the university context and with the teacher education students in particular, but also a wider group. Raising the awareness of faculty around issues of inclusion with EDSI, but not just with EDSI. So that was one example of student leadership, but we also had student leadership around graduate student career development. So working with a small team of grad students who did research and then defined and developed programs that they could co-teach one another in ways that supported their learning as graduate students and advanced their thinking about future careers. That's another example of the kind of leadership I think our faculty takes, because we see our students not as learners but as learning partners with us, and that learning is very reciprocal, and we can learn as much from our student leaders as they can learn from us. And so that reciprocity of learning, I think, is something that I think we've done very well in the faculty, and we've built on that. And the last one I'll mention is the Iranian Student Project. And that, again, it was a student, a leader initiative where a small group of Iranian students on campus came to us to talk about their needs for support. And then we developed a program that enabled them to take the lead on providing those supports with resources from the university. So we became partners in advancing what they needed to support them during a very critical time, a very difficult time for many of our Iranian students on campus. So I think that theme of student-led initiatives is something I would highlight as something that we should all be proud of as a faculty, because it comes from our belief systems, our pedagogy and practice.
That's beautiful. And to be able to walk away knowing that that was something, those projects were something that you were able to be a part of.
Yeah, I like what you say about being a part of and making space for, because that's what I think my role was, is not taking the lead, but creating a space in which others could lead and providing the supports that enabled them to take that leadership opportunity.
Vanessa, as you kind of mentioned earlier, you've been slowly transitioning into the role and spending some more time with the faculty since January, even co-piloted the, not piloted, but co-organized the faculty retreat. During your visits, what have you learned about the faculty thus far?
So the first part of my transition, as I entered a context of choppy waters, was to understand better the wider ecology within which the faculty is situated, right? So we need to understand that we are not a floating unit. We are in an ecology within the university and other faculties. The university is also in an ecology of other universities in the province and nationally and internationally. So I needed to have a better grasp of what was happening, also in terms of the changes, in order to be able to start engaging with the faculty from a different space. So the second part of my transition, which is finishing this month, has been much more related to faculty engagement. So I think we can say that it started with the preparation for the retreat, also the questions that I shared with the faculty about the questions that we need to hold, the through-line questions we need to hold as we make decisions and think together about where we want to go. But I've been learning a lot with the face-to-face, one-on-one meetings. And I've had around 20 so far. And we have another probably 30 planned for the summer. So I've learned about our strengths in arts, of course, in indigenous language revitalization, in indigenous teacher education, in educational technology. And I've been involved with the refresh of the teacher education program. And I can see that there is magic happening in different pockets. And I can also see that this magic is not necessarily connected. And one of the things that I observe is that people don't know what other people are doing. And for example, if we think about teacher education and arts education, we need much more conversation. We need to create a sense of community and a sense of belonging to a faculty, a collective identity, and a collective profile in order to move forward. But these amazing things that are happening in these different pockets, they need to connect, and we need to picture the puzzle or create the puzzle together, right? For now, I've been putting the pieces probably wrong, and I will have some. I will need some time to be able to sort it out in a way that is both intelligible to me and to others at the university and to ourselves, mm-hmm. too. And I'm excited about that.
I'm sure you answered this question during your interview process, but I, you know, having had some time now too, what got you interested in the Faculty of Education at UVic?
So UVic itself has a very interesting profile in the region, right? So it's a faculty committed to Indigenous engagement and to climate, addressing climate change and biodiversity loss. So this was a very strong pull. The Faculty of Education within this wider environment has an extremely important role in this sense, and we have a very strong language revitalization program and Indigenous education program that that was really already on my radar before. And coming to a faculty where we have a kind of a focus on leadership and people on the ground who are like Catherine, who are really committed to a different call to leadership, of distributed leadership, relational leadership, and leadership that creates spaces. I think that's one of the things that for me, in terms of an intergenerational commitment also to the people who are coming into education after us here, it was something that, like, even the decision to become a dean was based on that intergenerational commitment. There are institutions like UVic and UBC. UBC, in a sense, larger institutions can only have vanilla commitments to things like indigenization and climate change because there's so many stakeholders, so many different perspectives, and the stakes globally are very high. With a more regional university, a smaller university, these commitments can be much, much more substantiated, I think.
In particular, I think the notion of shared relational leadership is a paradigm that's, it isn't typical in the post-secondary sector, but it is becoming more recognized and valued. Certainly in my year as acting dean, I've noticed colleagues commenting on the value those kind of deep listening and relational approaches take in leadership, instead of thinking about leadership as simply a role or a function, a hierarchical function around decision making.
And it touches on my next question, which really is, you know, what is the purpose of the dean's position?
Well, I just want to reflect briefly on the fact that as a regular faculty member, thinking about the dean's role, you think the dean is about doing the work of the faculty. And when you get into the dean's role, what you find is the dean's role is multi-layered, mm-hmm. and it is not solely focused on the faculty itself, but that you're part of a team at the decanal level, university-wide, but then beyond that to alumni, to community members, to students who are coming in, prospective students. So you play a more complex role, I think, than I imagined as a faculty member. And I think that's one of the learnings that's come for me in going back into an associate role. I think that could be a way forward to working to create a culture where there's deeper understanding of both our shared responsibilities, but also understanding each other's responsibilities in different ways so that we can create a culture that recognizes the value that different positions play in the health of the faculty and the university.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this question too in terms of how I perceive the role of the dean, how it's perceived by the faculty. Universities have changed a lot in the last 30 years, and the decanal role has also shifted. In the past, it was like what you would do at the end of your career, right? And it would be your experience in the system that up to that point would serve you very well in becoming a dean. Today, that's not the same story. Actually, your experience as a faculty member may not prepare you at all to the dean position, right? Because it shifted. You will have to be a project manager, a manager, a government relations, a donor relations person, which is something else completely different. You would have to generate income, which was not in the menu on the menu before, right? So that creates a problem, because then if people are choosing deans in other institutions based on the experience they have in the old system, in the new system, these deans will probably not be able to be effective because the system has changed. The role, the demands on the role have shifted so much. So getting the whole faculty to come to an understanding of that, into supporting each other and the community to go to find a good pathway into the future. So at points, we have to ask the question, do we protect the past or do we protect the future? And at points, they could be compatible to protect both. And at points, it might not be the case, right? We'll have to make a choice. So instilling the sense of, as I said before, intergenerational accountability, that we need to be thinking about who's coming next and how this is going to be envisioned in a way that they have ownership and a stake on it, and that this responds to how society has changed as well. So in the inviting people to embrace the complexity, to be able to hold the paradoxes and work through the tensions with each other without relationships falling apart, without people feeling overwhelmed or immobilized, I think is the key for us to be able to create a resilient community that can be prepared to face the future and all the changes that are coming without falling apart. And this cannot be done by one person.
Catherine, does that kind of align with your experience over the past year as well in terms of just accountability and people understanding the dean's role?
I think so. I think we have been a faculty that's been comfortable in its past and in its current operation. And so disruptors, such as a new dean coming in, such as a new provost and new president, are viewed just as that, disruptors from the status quo, instead of understanding it as a form of external accountabilities, as Vanessa's described them, and their role in being a part of that intergenerational thinking. I like that metaphor because it helps us to see not just the moment of today, but examining the moments of the past, but projecting into the future. And I think that is something that most faculty members are unfamiliar with.
Would you say that's a kind of like a hope that you both have for the faculty in terms of a change in vision?
For me, we will need to figure out a way of, through a complexity approach, actually, if we do it through a complexity approach, it's not about single answers. It's not about simple answers either. It is about approaching teaching, learning, service as inquiry, and being able to learn both from our failures and our successes, right? And one of the things that I found from my experience at UBC, announcing it in the beginning, saying this is what we're gonna do, and we are committed to this and to that and the other, this less than actually doing it was one of the lessons. And once people started to feel what it feels, looks, and tastes like to be in this different way of being, they realized that this is not for Indigenous people, for BIPOC people, this is for everybody. It's a different way of relating and thinking in community that opens up new ways of being well and healthy for everyone. That's what I think will be on the table. It's the right time for them to engage with it. It's all to be seen. And whether I'm going to be able to articulate it right, to put it at the table as well. So there are things that I'm learning, and you're learning all the time, learning all the time in this job. I'll give my best shot.
And what about you, Catherine, in terms of hopes for the future of education, with even as coming back as the Associate Dean?
Well, I think I like to think that we have the energy, the creativity, and the passion to want to make a difference in the lives of the students, communities, and regions that we serve. So my hope is that we can grasp those opportunities and to look past the challenges that the budget has provided us, and to think about how we can do our work differently. I think there will be a time that people need to think through, struggle with changing contexts. It's one of the things that chairs and directors have said to me pretty much continuously all through the year is, how do we convey these messages to our faculty so that they feel a part of these conversations and not apart from these conversations, that it's being done, they're being done to, rather than encouraged to participate within. And so finding those tools, those mechanisms, and potentially removing the structures and ways we do it currently and the ways we think about doing our work currently in order to make different spaces where those kinds of collaborations can happen. You know, decisions do at the by there are deadlines that you're working up against all the time, and institutionally you're told that there are cycles that you have to adhere to, and so you don't have a choice about that. But there are ways of having those conversations so people feel their voices are included, and that's something I hope to continue doing as Associate Dean when I'm back in that role.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it. Well, obviously we've talked about this a little bit, but more formally, how do you think your diverse identities have formed your leadership and how you approach the deanship?
You know, leadership is an act of navigation, and it's a process of engagement with others. It's not the role itself. It's not a position. It's how we do this work together and how we navigate a path that enables us to realize our goals and dreams and to find alternative pathways when those barriers come up. So, you know, throughout my career, I can tell you countless examples of how my gender came into play, where I wasn't permitted, for example, in my first years of teaching to hold a part-time position because women were expected to stay at home and look after their children, and that they should quit their jobs when they got pregnant and stay at home for a certain number of years and then reapply and at the whim of the school district be reemployed. So, you know, those kind of ways of thinking are not so distant, especially if you think about the current context in which we have undergraduate students who cannot find a pathway into our teacher education program, for example, because of the barriers they face due to their diverse identities and their subjectivities, the ways in which they understand themselves. And so what the work we need to do as leaders is to understand those diverse identities so there's spaces for all folk to take a role and to lead when the time is right for them to lead, and then to be a partner in the leadership at other times in the process. And this is, goes back to what Vanessa was talking about earlier about shifting understandings of how leadership is practiced and what leadership is.
Vanessa, do you have any ideas?
In terms of BIPOC leadership, not many survive. We see a lot of burnout and a lot of people leaving the field or expressing that they want to leave the field and they can't take on anymore, right? And I've been there too, wanting just to quit, basically. But I was lucky enough to find a community, both within, not within one institution, but spread around many institutions, but also in the art sector, that supported me to stay. And also communities back home who said, that's where you need to be and we will have your back when you're there. So I would like to acknowledge that learning to hold the layers of complexity in these years that I've returned to academia with a new lease has been the thing that provides resilience, right? Not thinking that I have to solve everything overnight, understanding that things move and unfold, that change is not linear. But it is a shift of the values that we are exposed to values that need to be intrinsic. So asking people to think in a post-conventional way, thinking that the conventional way is a way that is leading to irresponsibility. Look at what is happening to the planet. We may be placing ourselves in the path of premature extinction. So figuring out that we do have a responsibility. And we do have a responsibility to live, age, and die well in that sense. It's not just a professional responsibility, it's an existential one. Mm-hmm. And that connection between our existential obligations, intergenerational commitments, and this responsibility towards the planet has a space and a natural space in education. What worked before is no longer working. The economies that we invested in before are negative economies right now. So health and well-being is compromised. And maybe there is another way of doing it that we can learn together and unlearn together towards a different way of being together.
So from one woman to another, would you have any words to share as a transition comes to a head?
I put myself in your shoes and say, okay, for the first year, if I had to do that, I would have been burnt out by the end of it, right? But no, I had actually a buffer. Not sure if that word is going to go the same, but I did have somebody to walk this with me, I feel, right? That I didn't have to do this alone. I wasn't not thrown at the deepest end of the pool. And for that, I believe that we had the best person in the world to do this job. I can't imagine how lucky this situation for you, Vic, for the faculty, for me. It was a stroke of luck, and I'm very grateful for that. And what you have taught me already, and what I'm looking forward to being taught in the future, I'm very happy. We are in the same faculty and that you're my colleague.
Thank you. I think the thing that I would want to say is take time to breathe and look after yourself and not always fixate on the work that lies ahead, but the ways in which you can create a community around you. Persons that understand the context as much as they understand you. So it's a safe sounding board, a safe place to both listen, talk, vent, reflect. I can think of nothing more important than having a safe place in which to engage and think and take the time you need to advance an approach that'll work for you. Yeah.
Thank you both so much. It just means the world to be at this table with you both. This has been really powerful for me. So I thank you both for showing up as you have. Hi, Ishka.